to turn them over for a few tetrarchs, for a few weeks of food or electricity rations. I remember hard winters well enough, cold and hungry days that seemed to have no end, sicknesses with easy cures but no money to buy the medicine, even the bitter ache of simple want to take something beautiful or useful simply because. I have done horrible things in such moments, stealing from people as desperate as I was. To survive. To keep us all alive. It's the justification I used back in the Stilts, when I took coins from families with starving children. I don't doubt that Krantz would turn me over to Boss Egan if he could, because it's what I would do. Sell me to Maven for an exorbitant price. But luckily, Krantz is hopelessly outgunned. He knows it, so he must maintain his smile. For now. The tunnel curves downward, and the undertrain tracks end suddenly, where the space grows too narrow for a train to pass through. It feels cooler the deeper we go, and the air presses in. I try not to think about the weight of the earth above us. Eventually, the walls become cracked and decrepit, and would probably collapse if not for the newly added supports. Naked wooden beams march into the darkness, each one holding up the tunnel ceiling, keeping us from being buried alive. "Where do we surface?" Cal says aloud, directing his question to anyone who will answer. Distaste poisons every word. The deeper tunnels have him on edge, just like me. "West side of Ocean Hill," Farley replies, mentioning the royal residence in Harbor Bay. But Krantz cuts her off with a shake of his head. "Tunnel's closed up," he grumbles. "There's new construction, King's orders. 3 days he's been on the throne, and he's already a pain in my ass." From this close, I hear Cal's teeth gnash together. A burst of anger brightens his fire, throwing a blaze of heat through the tunnel that the others pretend to ignore. King's orders. Even when he isn't trying, Maven thwarts our progress. Cal glances at his feet, stoic. "Maven always hated the hill." His words echo strangely off the walls, surrounding us in his memories. Too small for him. Too old. The shadows shift on the walls, distorting our figures. I see Maven in every twisted shape, in every pool of darkness. He told me once he was the shadow of the flame. Now I fear he's becoming the shadow in my mind, worse than a hunter, worse than a ghost. At least I'm not alone in his hauntings. At least Cal feels him, too. "The fish market, then." Farley's gruff bark brings me back to the mission at hand. "We'll have to circle around, and we'll need a distraction outside the security center, if you can manage." I glance back at the map, brain buzzing. From the looks of it, the security center is directly connected to Cal's old palace, or at least is part of the same compound. And the fish market, I assume, is a good distance away. We'll have to scramble just to get where we need to be, let alone slip inside. Judging by the scowl on Cal's face, he's not looking forward to it. "Egan will oblige," Krantz says, nodding at Farley's request. "He'll help in any way he can. Not that you'll need much, with the rabbit on your side." Shade grimaces kindly, still annoyed by the nickname. "How familiar are you with the Reds of the Bay? Think a few names will ring a bell?" I have to bite my lips shut to keep from hissing at my brother. The last thing I want to do is tell Krantz who we're looking for, especially because he'll wonder why. But Shade glances at me, eyebrows raised, goading me into speaking the names aloud. Next to him, Krantz does his best to keep his expression neutral, but his eyes gleam. He's all too eager to hear what I have to say. "Ada Wallace." It comes out a whisper, like I'm afraid the walls of the tunnel might steal my secret. "Wallover Galt." Galt. It sends a spark of recognition across Krantz's face, and he has no choice but to nod.
"Galt.
I know. Old family live off Chawside Road. Brewers by trade." He squints, trying to remember more.
"Best ale in the bay. Good friends to have."
My heartbeat quickens in my chest, delighted by the prospect of such luck, but it's tempered by the knowledge that now Krantz and the mysterious Egan know who we're looking for. Can't say I know the Wallace one,
he continues. It's a common enough name, but no one comes to mind. To my chagrin, I can't tell if he's lying, so I have to push to keep him talking. Perhaps Krantz will reveal something or give me an excuse to convince him to do so. You called yourselves the Mariners? I ask, careful to keep my tone neutral. He flashes a grin over his shoulder, then lifts a sleeve to reveal a tattoo on his forearm, a blue-black anchor surrounded by red, swirling rope. Best smugglers in the Beacon, he says proudly. You want it? We run it. And you serve the guard? That question makes his smile drop away, and he rolls down his sleeve again. There's a shadow of a nod, but nothing more convincing than that. I take it Egan's another captain? I quicken my pace until I'm almost stepping on Krantz's heels. His shoulders tighten at my closeness, and I don't miss it when the hairs on the back of his neck raise. And that makes you, what, his lieutenant? We don't bother with titles, he replies, dodging my needling. But I'm just getting started. The others look on, confused by my behavior. Killorn would understand. Better yet, he would play along. Forgive me, Krantz. The words come out sickly sweet. I sound like a court lady, not a sneak thief, and it rankles him. I'm simply curious about our brothers and sisters in the Bay. Tell me, what convinced you to join the cause? Hard silence. When I look back, Krantz's friends are just as quiet, their eyes almost black in the dim tunnel light. Was it Farley? Were you recruited? I press on, waiting for some sign of a break. Still, he doesn't respond, and a tremor of fear rolls through me. What isn't he telling us? Or did you seek the guard out like I did? Of course, I had a very good reason. I thought Shade was dead, you see, and I wanted vengeance. I joined up because I wanted to kill the people who killed my brother. Nothing, but Krantz's pace quickens. I've touched on something. Who did the Silvers take from you? I expect Shade to scold me for my questions, but he stays quiet. His attention never wavers from Krantz's face, trying to see what the smuggler is hiding. Because he is certainly hiding something from us, and we're all beginning to feel it. Even Farley tenses up, though she seemed so friendly moments ago. She's realized something, seen something she didn't see before. Her hand strays into her jacket, closing around what can only be another hidden knife. And Cal never let his guard drop to begin with. His fire burns, a naked threat to split the darkness. Again, I think of the tunnel. It starts to feel like a grave. Where is Melody? Farley murmurs, putting out one gentle hand to stop Krantz's progress. We halt as well, and I think I hear our hearts pounding against the tunnel walls. Egan would never send you, not alone. Slowly, I shift my body, turning so my back faces the wall, so I can see both Krantz and his rogues. Cal does the same, mirroring my motions. A bit of fire springs from his empty hand, waiting and ready in his palm. My own sparks dance in and out of my skin, tiny bolts of purple-white. They feel good to hold, little threads of pure strength. Above us, the traffic has increased, and I suspect we're close to the city gates, if not directly below them. Not a very good place for a battle, because that's what this is about to become. Where is Melody? Farley repeats, and her blade sings against the air. It reflects Cal's fire and glints sharply, burning light into Krantz's eyes. Krantz? His eyes widen despite the blinding glare, full of true regret. That is enough to send shivers of terror down my spine. You know what we are, who Egan is. We're criminals, Farley. We believe in money and survival. I know the life all too well, but I turned from that path. I'm not a rat anymore. I'm the Lightning Girl, and now I have too many ideals to count. Freedom, revenge, liberty, everything that fuels the sparks within me, and the resolve that keeps me going. Krantz's rogues move as slowly as I do, loosing guns from hidden holsters.
3 pistols, each one in an able, twitching hand. I suppose Krantz has one, too, but he hasn't revealed his weapon yet. He's too busy trying to explain, trying to make us understand exactly what's about to happen. And I certainly do. Betrayal is familiar to me, but it still turns my stomach and freezes my body with fear. I do all I can to ignore it, to focus. "They took her," he murmurs. "Sent Egan a trigger finger this morning. It's the same all over the bay. Every gang lost someone or something, dear. The Mariners, the Sea Skulls, even took Ricketts' little boy. And he's been out of the game for years. And the payout." He pauses, whistling darkly. "It's nothing to laugh at." "For what?" I breathe, not daring to take my eyes off the Mariner closest to me. She stares right back. Krantz's voice is a deep, sorrowful croak. "For you, Lightning Girl, it's not just the officers and the armies looking for you. It's us, too. Every smuggling ring, every thief company from here to Delphi. You're being hunted, Miss Barrow, in the sun and in the shadows, by Silva's and by your own. I'm sorry, but that's the way of it." His apology isn't for me, but Farley and my brother. His friends, now betrayed. My friends, in grave danger because of me. "What kind of trap did you set?" Shade growls, doing his best to look menacing despite the crutch under one arm. "What are we walking into?" "Nothing you like, Rabbit." In the strange light of Cal's fire, my sparks and Krantz's flashlight, I almost miss the flicker of his eyes. They dart to the left, landing on the support beam right next to me. The ceiling above it is cracked and splitting, with bits of dirt poking through the shards of concrete. "You son of a bitch," Shade growls, his voice too loud, his manner exaggerated. He looks liable to throw a punch at any moment. The perfect distraction. Here we go. The three Mariners raise their guns, aiming for my brother, for the fastest thing in existence. When he raises a fist, they pull their triggers, and their bullets cut through nothing but open air. I drop into a crouch, deafened by gunshots so close to my head, but keep all my focus where it must be, the support beam. A blast of lightning splinters the wood like a detonation, charring straight through. It shatters, collapsing, as I throw a second bolt at the cracked ceiling. Cal vaults sideways toward Krantz and Farley, dodging falling slabs of concrete. If I had time, I'd be afraid of getting buried with the Mariners. But Shade's familiar hand closes around my wrist. I shut my eyes, fighting the squeezing sensation, before hitting ground a few yards down the tunnel. Now we're ahead of Krantz and Farley, currently helping Cal to his feet. The tunnel on the other side of them is collapsed, filled up with dirt and concrete and three crushed bodies. Krantz spares one last look for his fallen Mariners, then draws his hidden pistol. For one brief, blistering moment, I think he might shoot me. But instead, he raises his electrifying gaze, staring down the tunnel as it quakes around us. His lips move, forming a single word. Run. 14. Left, right, left again. Climb. Krantz's barked orders follow us through the tunnels, guiding our pounding footsteps. The occasional echoing boom of another collapse keeps us moving as fast as we can. We've set off a chain reaction, an implosion within the tunnels. Once or twice the tunnel collapses, so close to us, I hear the sharp snap of cracking support beams. Rats run with us, twisting out of the gloom. I shudder when they dash over my toes, naked tails whipping like tiny ropes. We didn't have many rats at home. The river floods would drown them, and the waves of greasy black fur make my skin crawl. But I do my best to swallow my revulsion. Cal isn't keen on them either, and swipes at the ground with one flaming fist, pushing back the vermin every time they get too close. Dust swirls at our heels, choking the air, and Krantz's flashlight is all but useless in the gloom. The others rely on touch, reaching out to feel along the tunnel walls, but I keep my mind fixed on the world above, on the web of electrical wire and rolling transports. It paints a map in my head, fixing over the paper one I've nearly memorized. With it, I feel everything with my growing range. The sensation is overwhelming, but I push through, forcing myself to take in everything I can. Transports scream overhead, rolling toward the initial collapse. A few careen through alleyways, probably avoiding sunken roads and twisted debris. A distraction. Good. The tunnels are Farley and Krantz's domain, a kingdom made of dust. But it falls to Cal to get us out of the darkness, and the irony is not lost on us both. When we dead-end at a service door, welded shut, Cal doesn't need to be told what to do. He steps forward, hands outstretched, his bracelet sparking, and then white-hot flame springs to life. It dances in his palms, allowing him to grip the door's hinges and heat them until they melt into red globs of iron. The next obstacle, a metal grate, clotted with rust, is even easier, and he peels it away in seconds. Again, the collapsing tunnel shudders like a thunderclap, but from much farther away. More convincing are the rats, now calm, disappearing back into the dark they came from. Their little shadows are a strange, disgusting comfort. We've outrun death together. Krantz gestures through the broken gate, meaning for us to follow, but Cal hesitates, one scalding hand still resting on iron. When he loosens his grip, it leaves behind red metal and the indent of his hand. "The paltry?" he asks, glancing down the tunnel. Cal knows Harbor Bay much better than I. After all, he's lived here before, occupying Ocean Hill every time the royal family came to the area. No doubt Cal's done his share of sneaking through the docks and alleys here, just like he was doing the first time he met me. "Aye," Krantz replies with a quick nod. "Close to the scent as I can get you. Egan instructed me to take you through the fish market, and has the mariners ready to grab you. Not to mention a squad of security. He won't expect you to go through a paltry place, and won't have anyone on lookout." The way he says it sets my teeth on edge. "Why?" "The paltry is Sea Skull territory." The Sea Skulls. Another gang, likely branded with tattoos more foreboding than Krantz's anchor. If not for Maven's scheming, they might have helped a Red Sister. But instead, they've been turned into enemies almost as dangerous as any Silver Soldier. "That's not what I meant," I continue, using Marina's voice to hide my fear. "Why are you helping us?" A few months ago, the thought of three bodies crushed by rubble might have frightened me. Now I've seen much worse, and barely spare a thought for Krantz's cohorts and their twisted bones. Krantz, despite his criminal nature, doesn't look so comfortable. His eyes glare back into the darkness, after the mariners he helped kill. They were probably his friends. But there are friends I would trade, lives I would forsake, for my own victories. I've done it before. It isn't hard to let people die when their deaths give life to something else. "I'm not one for oaths, or red dawns, or any of the other nonsense your lot goes on about," he mumbles, one fist closing and clenching in rapid succession. "Words don't impress me, but you're doing a hell of a lot more than talking. The way I see it, I can either betray my boss or my blood." Blood. Me. His teeth gleam in the dim light, flashing with every barbed word. "Even rats want to get out of the gutter, Miss Farrow." Then he steps through the grate, toward the surface that could kill us all. And I follow. I square my shoulders, turning to face the echoes in the end of the tunnel's safety. I've never been to Harbor Bay before, but the map and my electrical sense are enough. Together they paint a picture of roads and wiring. I can feel the military transports rolling toward the fort, and the lights of the paltry. What's more, a city is something I understand. Crowds, alleys, all the distractions of daily life, these are my kinds of camouflage. Paltry Place is another market, alive as Grand Garden in Somerton or the Square of the Stilts. But it is dirtier, more harried, free of silver overlords but choked with teeming red bodies and haggling shouts. A perfect place to hide. We emerge on the lowest level, a subterranean tangle of stalls crisscrossed by greasy canvas canopies. But there's no smoke or stink down here. Reds might be poor, but we are not stupid. One glimpse up, through the grated wide hole in the ceiling, tells me the upper levels sell stinking fish or smoked meat, letting the scents escape into the sky. For now, we're surrounded by peddlers, inventors, weavers, each one trying to foist their wares onto patrons who don't have 2 tetra coins to rub together. The money makes everyone desperate. Merchants want to get it, buyers want to keep it, and it blinds them all. No one notices a few well-trained sneaks slip out from a forgotten hole in the wall. I know I should feel afraid, but being surrounded by my own is strangely comforting. Krantz leads, his muscled swagger morphing into a limp to match Shade's. He pulls a hood from his vest and hides his face in shadow. To the casual eye, he looks like a bent old man, though he's anything but. He even supports Shade a little, one arm braced against his shoulder to help my brother walk. Shade doesn't have to worry about hiding his face, and keeps his focus on not slipping over the uneven ground of the lower paltry. Farley brings up the rear, and I'm reassured to know she has my back. For all her secrets, I can trust her, not to see a trap, but to weasel her way out of one. In this world of betrayal, it's the best I can hope for. It's been a few months since I last stole something, and when I slide a pair of charcoal gray shawls from a stall, my motions are quick and perfect, but I feel an unfamiliar twinge of regret. Someone made these. Someone spun and wove the wool into these rough scraps. Someone needs these. But so do I. One for me, one for Cal. He takes it quickly, drawing the frayed wool around his head and shoulders to hide his recognizable features. I do the same, and none too soon. Our first few steps into the crowded, dim market lead us right past a signboard, usually filled with notices of sale, news scraps, memorials. The red noise has been covered up by a checkered swath of printings. A few children mill about the signboard, ripping up the bits of paper in reach. They toss the scraps at each other like snowballs. Only one of the kids, a girl with ragged black hair and bare brown feet, bothers to look at what they're doing. She stares at 2 familiar faces, each glaring down from a 12 huge posters. They are stark and grim, headlined with big black letters that read, "Wanted by the Crown for Terrorism, Treason, and Murder." I doubt many of the people swarming the paltry can read, but the message is clear enough. Cal's picture isn't his royal portrait, which made him appear strong, kingly, and dashing. No, the image of him is grainy but distinct, a frozen still from one of the many cameras that captured him in the moments before his failed execution in the Bowl of Bones. His face is haggard, pulled by loss and betrayal, while his eyes spark with unchecked rage. The muscles stand out as his neck, straining. There might even be dried blood on his collar. It makes him look every inch the murderer Maven wants him to seem. The lower posters of him are torn up or covered in graffiti, in spiky scratched handwriting almost too violently etched to make out. The King Killer, the Exile. The titles rip at the paper, as if the words could make the photographed skin bleed, and weaving among the titles, "Find him, find him, find him." Like Cal, the picture of me is taken from the Bowl of Bones. I know exactly which moment. It was before I walked through the gates of the arena, when I stood and listened to Lucas take a bullet to the brain. In that second, I knew I was going to die, but worse, I knew I was useless. The now dead Arvin was with me, suffocating my abilities, reducing me to nothing. My printed eyes are wide, afraid, and I look small. I am not the Lightning Girl in this photo. I am only a scared teenager, someone no one would stand behind, let alone protect. I don't doubt Maven chose this frame himself, knowing exactly what kind of image this would project. But some have not been fooled. Some saw the split second of my strength, my lightning, before the execution broadcast was cut away. Some know what I am, and they have written it across the posters for all to see. Red Queen, The Lightning Girl. She lives. Rise. Red is dawn. Rise. 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 Every word feels like a brand, searing hot and deep. But we can't tarry by the wall of wanted posters. I nudge Cal, directing him away from the brutal vision of us. He goes willingly, following Shade and Krantz through the swirling crowd. I resist the urge to hold on to him, to try and take a bit of the weight off his shoulders. No matter how much I might want to feel him, I cannot. I must keep my eyes ahead and away from the fire of a fallen prince. I must freeze my heart to the one person who insists on setting it ablaze. Winding up the paltry is easier than it should be. A red market is of no consequence to anyone important, so cameras and officers are sparse on the lower levels. But I keep my senses open, feeling out the few electrical sight lines that manage to penetrate through the haphazard stalls and storefronts. I wish I could just shut them off, instead of awkwardly avoiding them. But even that is too dangerous. A mysterious outage would surely draw attention. The officers are even more troubling, standing out sharply in the black uniforms of security. As we climb through the levels of the paltry, up to the city surface, they grow in number. Most look bored by the rush of red life, but a few keep their wits. Their eyes dart through the crowd, searching. "Hunch," I whisper, gripping Cal's wrist sharply. The action sends a spark of nerves through my hand and up my arm, forcing me to pull away far too quickly. Still, he does as I tell him, stooping to hide his height. It might not be enough, though. All of this might not be enough. "Worry about him. If he bolts, we need to be ready." Cal murmurs back, his lips close enough to brush my ear. He points one finger out from the folds of his shawl, gesturing to Krantz. But my brother has the Mariner well in hand, keeping a firm grip on Krantz's vest. Like us, he doesn't trust the smuggler further than he can throw him. "Shade has him. Focus on keeping your head down." Breath hisses through Cal's teeth, another exasperated sigh. "Just watch. If he's going to run, he'll do it in about 30 seconds. I don't need to ask how Cal knows this. Judging by the motion of the crowd, 30 seconds will take us to the top of the twisting, rickety staircase, planting us firmly on the main floor of the paltry. I can see the hub of the market now, just above us, streaming with midday light that is almost blinding after our time underground. The stalls look more permanent, more professional and profitable. An open kitchen fills the air with the smell of cooking meat. After ration packs and saltfish, it makes my mouth water. Worn wooden arches bow overhead, supporting a patched and torn canvas roof. A few of the arches are damaged, warped by seasons of rain and snow. "He won't run," Farley whispers, butting in between us. "At least, not to Egan. He'll lose his head for betraying the Mariners. If he's going anywhere, it's out of the city." "Then let him," I whisper back. Another red to babysit is the last thing I need. "He's fulfilled his use to us, hasn't he? And if he runs right into a jail cell and an interrogation, what then?" Cal's voice is soft, but full of menace. A cold reminder of what must be done to protect ourselves. "He let 3 of his people die for me, to keep me safe. I don't even remember their faces. I can't let myself. I doubt torture will bother him much." "All minds can fall to Ilara Mirandis," Cal finally says. "You and I know that better than anyone. If she gets him, we'll be found. The Bay New Bloods will be found. If." Cal wants to kill a man based on such a terrible word. He takes my silence as agreement, and to my shame I realize he's not entirely wrong. At least he won't make me do it, though my lightning can kill as quickly as any flame. Instead, his hands stray inside his shawl, to the knife I know he keeps tucked away. Within the folds of my sleeves, my hands start to shake, and I pray that Krantz stays the course, that his steps never falter, that he doesn't get a knife in the back for daring to help me. The main floor of the paltry is louder than the depths, an overload of sound and sight. I scale back my senses a little, shutting out what I must to keep my wits about me. The lights whine overhead, ragged with a pulse of uneven currents. Their wiring is faulty, flickering in places. It makes one of my eyes twitch. The cameras are more intense, too, focused on the security post at the center of the marketplace. It's little more than a stall itself, six-sided, with five windows, a door, and a shingled roof. Except the box is full of officers instead of mismatched wares. Too many officers, I realize with a steadily growing horror.
Faster, I whisper. We must go faster.
My feet find a quicker pace, outstripping Cal and Farley, until I'm almost on Krantz's heels. Shade glances over his shoulder, brow furrowed, but his gaze slides past me, past all of us, and fixes on something in the crowd. No, someone.
We're being followed, he mumbles, his grip tightening on Krantz's arm. Seaskulls.
Instincts be damned. I tip my hood so I can get a glimpse of them. They're not hard to pick out. White ink on shaved heads, tattooed skulls of jagged bone on their scalps. No less than four seaskulls pick their way through the crowd, following us as rats when a mouse. Two from the left, two from the right, flanking us. If the situation wasn't so dire, I would laugh at their matching tattoos. The crowd knows them by sight, and parts to let them pass, to let them hunt. The other Reds clearly fear these criminals, but I do not. A few thugs are nothing compared to the might of the dozen security officers milling about their post. They could be Swifts, strong arms, oblivions, Silvers who can make us pay in blood and pain. At least I know they're not so dangerous as the Silvers of the court, the Whispers and Silks and Silences. Whispers as powerful as Queen Alara don't wear lowly black uniforms. They control armies and kingdoms, not a few yards of marketplace, and they are far away from here. For now. To our surprise, the first blow comes not from behind, but from dead ahead of us. A bent old crone with a cane is not who she seems, and hooks Krantz around the neck with her gnarled piece of wood. She throws him to the ground and removes her cloak in one motion, revealing a bald head and a skull tattoo. Fish market not enough for you, mariner? She snarls, watching as Krantz lands on his back. Shade goes down with him, too tangled up in Krantz's limbs and his own crutch to stay standing. I move to help, lunging forward, but an arm grabs me around the waist, pulling me back into the crowd. Others look on, eager for a bit of entertainment. No one notices us melt into the wall of faces, not even the four seaskulls who followed us. We are not their target. Yet. Keep walking. Cal rumbles in my ear. But I set my feet. I will not be moved, not even by him. Not without Shade. The seaskull woman smacks Krantz as he tries to stand, her cane cracking soundly against bone. She's quick, turning her weapon on Shade, who is smart enough to stay on the ground, his arms raised in mock surrender. He could disappear in an instant, jumping his way to safety, but knows he cannot. Not with every eye watching, not with the security post so close by.
Fools and thieves, a lot of them, a woman grumbles nearby.
She seems to be the only one annoyed by the display. Merchants, patrons, and street urchins alike look on in anticipation, and the security officers do nothing at all, watching with veiled amusement. I even catch a few of them passing coins, making bets on the brewing fight. Another smack, this time hitting Shade's wounded shoulder. He grits his teeth, trying to hold back a grunt of pain, but it echoes loudly over the paltry. I almost feel it myself, and wince as he crumples.
I don't know your face, mariner, the seaskull crows.
She hits him again, hard enough to send a message.
But Egan certainly will. He'll pay for your safe, if bruised, return.
My fist clenches, wishing for lightning, but I feel flame instead. Hot skin against mine, fingers worming into my grip. Cal, I won't be able to spark up without hurting him. Part of me wants to push him away and save my brother in a single sweeping motion. But that will get us nowhere. With a sharp gasp, I realize we could not ask for a better distraction, a better moment to slip away. Shade is not a distraction, a voice screams in my head. I bite my lip, almost breaking the skin. I can't leave him. I can't.
I can't lose him again. But we can't stay here. It's too dangerous and so much more is at stake. The security center, I whisper, trying to keep my voice from shaking. Ada Wallace must be found, and the center is the only way. The next words taste like blood. We should go. Shade lets the next blow knock him sideways, giving him a better angle. His eyes meet mine. I hope he understands. My lips move without sound. Security center, I mouth to him, telling him where to meet us when he gets away. Because he will get away. He's a new blood like me. These people are no match for him. It almost sounds convincing. His face falls, torn by the knowledge that I will not save him. But he nods all the same. And then the press of bodies swallows him whole, blocking him from sight. I turn my back before Kane hits bone, but I hear the hard, echoing sound. Again, I wince, and tears bite my eyes. I want to look back, but I have to walk away, to do what must be done, and forget what must be forgotten. The crowd cheers and presses forward to see, making it all the easier for us to slip into the street and deep into the city of Harbor Bay. The streets surrounding the Paltry are like the market itself, crowded, noisy, stinking of fish and bad tempers. I expect no less from the red sector of the city, where houses are cramped and leaning out over the alleys, forming shadowed archways half-filled with garbage and beggars. There are no officers that I can see, drawn either to the gang fight in the Paltry or the tunnel collapses far behind us. Cal takes the lead now, moving us steadily south, away from the red center. Familiar territory? Farley asks, cutting a suspicious glance at Cal when he ducks us down yet another twisting alley. Or are you just as turned around as I am? He doesn't bother to answer, responding only with a quick wave of the hand. We scamper by a tavern, its windows already swarming with shadows of professional drunks. Cal's eyes linger on the door, painted an offensively bright red. One of his old haunts, I suppose, when he could slip out of Ocean Hill undetected to see his kingdom without the sheen of silver high society. That's what a good king would do, he said once. But as I discovered, his definition of a good king was very, very flawed. The beggars and the thieves he's encountered over the years were not enough to convince the prince. He saw hunger and injustice, but not enough to warrant change. Not enough to be worth his worry. That is until his world chewed him up and spit him out, making him an orphan, an exile, and a traitor. We follow him because we must. Because we need a soldier and a pilot, a blunt instrument to help us achieve our goals. At least, that's what I tell myself as I trail at his heels. I need Cal for noble reasons. To save lives. To win. But like my brother, I too have a crutch. Mine is not metal. It is flesh and fire and bronze eyes. If only I could cast him away. If only I was strong enough to let the prince go and do what he would with his vengeance. To die or live as he saw fit. But I need him, and I can't find the strength to let him go. Though we're far from the fish market, a horrible smell permeates through the street. I push my shawl to my nose, trying to block out whatever it is. Not fish, I steadily realize, and the others know it, too. We shouldn't go this way, Cal murmurs, putting out a hand to stop me. But I duck under his arm. Farley is right on my heels. We emerge from the side street into what was once a modest garden square. Now it is deathly quiet. The windows of the houses and shops shut fast. The flowers are burned, the soil turned to ash. Dozens of bodies swing from the bare trees, their faces purple and bloated, with rope nooses around their necks. Each one has been stripped naked, save for their matching red medallions. Nothing fancy, just carved wooden squares dangling from rough cord. I've never seen necklaces like that, and I focus on them to keep my eyes from so many dead faces. They've been up for a while, judging by the smell and the buzzing cloud of flies. I'm not a stranger to death, but these corpses are worse than any I've seen, or made. The measures? I wonder aloud. Did these men and women break curfew? Speak out of turn? Were they executed for the orders I gave? Not your orders, I tell myself reflexively, but that doesn't lessen the guilt. Nothing will. Farley shakes her head. Their red watch, she mumbles. She starts to step forward, but thinks better of it. Bigger cities, bigger red communities, they have their own guards and officers. To keep the peace, to keep our laws, because security won't. No wonder the Sea Skulls attacked Krantz and Shade so openly. They knew no one would punish them. They knew the Red Watch was dead. We should cut them down, I say, though I know it's not possible. We don't have the time to bury them, nor do we want the trouble. I make myself turn away. The sight is an abomination, one I will not forget. But I do not weep. Cal is there, waiting a respectable distance away, as if he doesn't have the right to enter the Hanging Square. I quietly agree. His people did this. His people. Farley is not so collected as me. She tries to hide the tears gathering in her eyes, and I pretend not to notice them as we walk away.
There will be a reckoning. They will answer for this,
she hisses, her words tighter than any noose. The farther we go from the paltry, the more ordered the city becomes. Alleys widen into streets, curving gently instead of turning at hairpin angles. Buildings here are stone or smoothed concrete, and don't look ready to fall down in a strong breeze. A few homes, meticulously kept but small, must belong to the successful Reds of the city, judging by the red doors and shutters. They are marked by our color, branded, so everyone knows who and what lives inside. The Reds wandering the street are just as clear, mostly servants wearing corded red bracelets. A few have striped badges pinned to their clothes, each one bearing a familiar color order, denoting which family they serve. The closest one has a badge of red and brown, House Rombos. My lessons with Lady Blanos come flooding back, a blur of half-remembered facts. Rombos, one of the high houses, governors of this, the Beacon region. Strong arms. They had a girl in Queen's trial, a slip of a thing named Roar, who could tear me in half. I met another Rombos in the Bowl of Bones. He was supposed to be one of my executioners, and I killed him. I electrified him until his bones shrieked. I can still hear him screaming. After the Hanging Square, the thought almost makes me smile. The Rombos servants turn west, up a slight incline to a hill that overlooks the harbor. Heading for their master's mansion, no doubt. It's one of the many palatial homes dotting the rise, each one boasting pristine white walls, sky-blue roofs, and tall silver spires topped with sharp-pointed stars. We follow, winding our way up, drawing closer to the largest structure of all. It looks crowned in constellations, surrounded by clear, gleaming walls. Diamond glass. Ocean Hill, Cal says, following my gaze. The compound dominates the crest of the rise, a fat white cat lazing peacefully behind crystalline walls. Like Whitefire Palace, the edges of the roof are gilded in metal flames, so expertly forged they seem to dance in the sunlight. Its windows wink like jewels, each one gleaming and clean, the product of who knows how many red servants' toil. The echo of construction scrapes and rumbles from the palace, doing only Maven knows what to the royal residence. Part of me wants to see it, and I have to laugh at such a foolish side of myself. If I ever step inside a palace again, it will be in chains. Cal can't look at the hill long. It is a distant memory now, a place he can no longer go, a home to which he cannot return. I suppose we have that in common. 15. Gulls perch on the stars adorning every roof,
Watching as we pass through the cool midday shadows, I feel exposed beneath their gaze, a fish about to be snapped up for dinner. Cal keeps us moving at a brisk pace, and I know he feels the danger too. Even in the back alleys, overlooked only by service doors and servants' quarters, we are still hopelessly out of place, in our hoods and threadbare clothing. This part of the city is peaceful, quiet, pristine, and dangerous. The farther in we go, the tenser I feel, and the low pulse of electricity deepens, a steady thrum in every house we pass. It even arcs overhead, carried through wire camouflaged by twisting vines or blue-striped awnings. But I feel no cameras, and the transports stick to the main streets. So far, we have gone unnoticed, protected by a pair of bloody distractions. Cal guides us quickly through what he calls the star sector. Judging by the 1,000 stars on 100 domed roofs, the neighborhood is aptly named. He skirts us down the alleys, careful to give Ocean Hill a wide berth, until we circle back to a main road busy with traffic. An offshoot of the port road, if I remember the map correctly, connecting Ocean Hill and its outbuildings to the bustling harbor in Fort Patriot below, stretching out into the water. From this angle, the city spreads all around us, a painting of white and blue. We fall in with the reds crowding the sidewalks. There, the white flagstones are choked with military transports. They vary in size, ranging from two-man vehicles to armored boxes on wheels, most of them stamped with the sword symbol of the army. Cal's eyes glitter beneath his hood, watching each one pass. I'm more concerned with the civilian transports. They're fewer in number, but they gleam, moving swiftly through the traffic. The more impressive ones fly colored flags, denoting the house they belong to, or the passenger they carry. To my relief, I don't see the red and black of Maven's house, Kalor, or the white and navy of Ilara's house, Mirandus. At least I won't have to expect the very worst from today. The jostling crowd forces us to walk huddled together, with Cal on my right and Farley on my left. "How much farther?" I whisper, edging my face back into my hood. The map has gone fuzzy in my head, despite my best efforts. Too many twists and turns to keep straight, even for me. Cal nods his head in response, gesturing to a bustling throng of people and transports up ahead. I gulp at the sight of what is undoubtedly the beating heart of Harbor Bay. The crown of the city's hill, ringed by white stone and diamond glass walls. I can see the palace gates, bright blue and scaled with silver, but a few starry turrets peek out. It is a beautiful place, but cold, cruel, and razor sharp. Dangerous. On the map, this looked like nothing more than a plaza in front of the gates of Ocean Hill, connected to the harbor and the gates of Fort Patriot down the gentle slope. The reality is much more complicated. Here, the two worlds of this kingdom seem to mingle, red and silver drawn together for a fraction of a moment. Dock workers, soldiers, servants, and high lords cross beneath the crystal dome arcing over the massive courtyard. A fountain twists in the center, surrounded by white and blue flowers not yet touched by autumn. Sunshine shimmers through the dome, refracting dancing light onto the realm of brightly colored chaos. The fort gates are directly down the avenue from us, dappled by the shifting light of the dome. Like those of the palace, they are artfully crafted. 40 feet high, made of burnished bronze and silver braided into giant swirling fish. If not for the dozens of soldiers and my sheer terror, I might find the gates magnificent. They hide the bridge beyond, and Fort Patriot farther out to sea. Horns and shouts and laughter add to the overload, until I have to look down at my boots and catch my breath. The thief in me delights at the thought of so much confusion, but the rest is frightened and frayed, a live wire trying to contain its sparks. "You're lucky it's not the night of a single star," Cal murmurs, his eyes far away. "The whole city explodes for the festival." I don't have the strength or the need to respond to him. The night is a silver holiday, held in memory of some navy battle decades ago. It means nothing to me, but one glance at Cal and his distracted gaze tells me he doesn't agree. He's seen the night in this very city and remembers it fondly. Music and laughter and silk. Maybe fireworks over the water and a royal feast to end the party. His father's approving smile. Jokes with Maven. Everything he's lost. Now it's my turn to look far away. That life is gone, Cal. It shouldn't make you happy anymore. Don't worry, he adds when his expression clears. He shakes his head, trying to hide a sad smile. We've made it. That's the security center there. The building he indicates stands on the edge of the bustling square, its white walls stark against the tangled traffic below. It looks like a beautiful fortress, with thick glassed windows and steps leading up to a terrace, surrounded by columns carved into the scaly tails of enormous fish. Patrolled walkways arch over the diamond glass walls of Ocean Hill, tying it to the rest of the palatial compound. The roof is also blue, decorated not with stars, but spikes. Cruel iron, 6 feet long and sharpened to a wicked point. For magnetrons, I suppose, to use against any kind of assault. The rest of the building is the same, covered in silver weapons. Vines and thorny plants wind up the columns for green wardens, while a pair of wide, still pools hold dark water for nymphs. And of course, there are armed guards at every door, long rifles plain in their hands. Worse than any guard are the banners. They flap in the sea breeze, streaming from the walls, turrets, and fishtail columns. They bear not the silver spear of security, but the burning crown. Black, white, and red, its points twisting in curls of flame. They stand for Norda, for the kingdom, for Maven, for everything we're trying to destroy. And between them on gilded banners of his own is Maven, or at least his image. He stares out, his father's crown on his head, his mother's eyes glaring. He looks like a young but strong boy, a prince rising to the ultimate occasion. Long live the king, screams beneath every picture of his sharp, pale face. Despite the impressive defenses, despite Maven's haunting stare, I can't help but smile. The center pulses with my own weapon, with electricity. It is more powerful than any magnetron, any green warden, any gun. It is everywhere, and it is mine. If only I could use it properly. If only we didn't have to hide. If. I despise that stupid word. It hangs in the air close enough to touch. What if we can't get in? What if we can't find Ada or Walliver? What if Shade doesn't come back? The last thought burns more deeply than the rest. Even though my eyes are sharp, trained on the crowded streets, I can't see my brother anywhere. He should be easy to spot, limping along on his crutch, but he's nowhere to be found. Panic deepens my senses, taking away a little of the control I worked so hard to cultivate. I have to bite my lip to keep from gasping aloud. Where is my brother? So now we wait? Farley says, her voice trembling with dread of her own. Her eyes sweep back and forth, also searching. For my brother. I don't think even you two can get in there without Shade. Cal scoffs, too busy examining the center's defenses to spare a glance for her. We could get in just fine. It might mean sending the whole place up in smoke. Not exactly the subtle approach. No, not at all, I murmur, if only to distract myself. But no matter how hard I try to focus on my feet or Cal's capable hands, I can't stop worrying about Shade. Up until this moment, I never truly doubted he would meet us. He's a teleporter, the fastest thing alive, and a few dock thugs shouldn't pose him any threat. That's what I told myself back in the Paltry when I left him, when I abandoned him. He took a bullet for me a few days ago, and I threw him to the sea skulls like a lamb to wolves. Back in Naersey, I told Shade I didn't trust his word. I suppose he shouldn't trust mine either. My fingers stray into my hood, trying to massage the ache from my neck muscles.
but it brings me no respite. Because right now we're idling in front of a veritable firing squad, waiting like stupid chickens eyeing a butcher's knife. And while I fear for Shade, I fear for myself, too. I cannot be taken. I will not. The back entrance, I say. It's not a question. Every house has a door, but it also has windows, a hole in the roof, or a broken lock. There is always a way in. Cal furrows his brow at a loss for once. A soldier should never be sent to do a thief's job. We're better off with Shade, he argues. No one will even know he's in. A few more minutes, we put every new blood at greater risk, with every second we waste. Besides, Shade won't have a problem finding us later. I take my first steps off the port road and onto a side street. Cal sputters but follows along. All he has to do is follow the smoke. Smoke? He blanches. A controlled burn, I continue, a plan formulating so fast the words barely have time to pass my lips. Something contained. A firewall just big enough to hold them back until we get the names we need. A few nymph grunts shouldn't pose much of a threat to you, and if they do... I ball my hand, letting a tiny spark spin in my palm. That's what I'm here for. Farley, I assume you know the record system? She doesn't hesitate to nod, her face shining with an odd sort of pride. Finally, she mutters. No point in lugging you two around if you're not going to be useful. Cal's eyes darken into a fearsome glare that reminds me of his dead father. You know what this will do, don't you? He warns, as if I'm some kind of child. Maven will know who did this. He'll know where we are. He'll know what we're doing. I round on Cal, angry that I must explain. Angry that he doesn't trust me to make any kind of decision. We took Nix more than 12 hours ago. Someone will notice Nix is gone if they haven't already. It will be reported. You think Maven isn't watching every name on Julian's list? I shake my head, not knowing why I didn't realize sooner. He'll know what we're doing the moment he hears of Nix's disappearance. It doesn't matter what we do here. After today, no matter what, it will truly be a manhunt. Citywide searches for us, orders to kill on sight. So why not get ahead of the curve? He doesn't argue, but that doesn't mean he agrees. Either way, I don't care. Cal doesn't know this side of the world. The gutters and the mud we must throw ourselves into. I do. It's time we stop pulling our punches, Cal. Farley joins in. Again, no answer. He looks dejected, disgusted even. They're my own people, Mayor. He finally whispers. Another man would yell, but Cal is not the type to shout. His whispers usually burn, but I feel only determination. I won't kill them. Silvers, I finish for him. You won't kill Silvers. He shakes his head slowly. I can't. And yet you were willing to end Krantz not too long ago. I press on, hissing. He's one of your people, too, or he would be if you were king. But I suppose his blood's the wrong color, right? He sputters, that's not the same. If he ran, if he was captured, we'd be in such danger. The words stick in his throat, trailing away. Because there are simply no words left for him to say. He's a hypocrite, plain and simple, no matter how fair he claims to be. His blood is silver and his heart is silver, and he will never value another above his own. Leave, I want to say. The words taste bitter. I can't force them past my lips. As infuriating as his prejudice, his allegiances are, I can't do what should be done. I can't let him go. He is so wrong, and I can't let him go. Then don't kill, I grind out. But remember that he did. My people, and your own. They follow him now, and they'll kill us for their new king. I point one bruised finger back at the street, to the banners bearing Maven's face. Maven, who sacrificed Silvers to the Scarlet Guard, to turn rebels into terrorists and destroy his own enemies in a single swoop. Maven, who murdered everyone at court who truly knew me. Lucas and Lady Blanos and my maids.